Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden T20 World Cup Daily Podcast on this unforgettable triple game day. This World Cup just keeps on delivering. Zimbabwe beat Pakistan in a last ball thriller that will be remembered for decades to come. We'll talk about their remarkable win at Perth, South Africa laying down an imposing marker against Bangladesh and India's thoroughly professional victory over the Netherlands. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is the head of content at Wisden India, Abhishek Mukherjee, and Wisden.com staff writer, Katia Whitney. A bit of pod admin before we get going. This is the second of two podcasts to hit your feed today. The other one is a weekly show looking more broadly at the T20 World Cup so far, delving deeper into Ireland's win over England, as well as looking at some of the other big non-World Cup stories from the last week. So two free podcasts in one day. Head to that episode once you're done listening to us three now. But anyway, on with the show. This World Cup has been so good. Pommy Mbangwe on commentary describes Zimbabwe's position at the halfway point in the game against Pakistan after they only got 130 as dead and half buried. But somehow with that excellent seam attack and Sikander Raza in the middle with his spin, they defended 130 by a run. Pakistan losing off the last ball again. Abhishek, what did Zimbabwe do so well in the second half of that game? And what did Pakistan get wrong in that chase?
I think they had tall, fast bowlers, and the Perth pitch, I saw a graphic, it produced it. The bounce is more steeper than the other Australian venues. So that extra height made a difference. That made a real difference. As we saw in the power playovers, the Pakistani batters got stuck. We were not that surprised when the Indian fast bowlers did that. But the Zimbabwean fast bowlers made excellent use of the bounce. And then Raza, I mean, I can't see him do anything wrong this year.
Just on when you say making best use of the bounce, what do you mean by that? Is that just hitting the middle of the pitch more and more?
Yeah, and Pakistan are a more than decent T20 side. But when was the last time they handled bounce? They played against bounce. Same batters. They do so well in other conditions. Even in England, they have done well. But when was the last time they handled bounce?
And bounce is as much of a factor as raw pace, I guess, in Australia.
Yes.
We'll get a bit more onto Australian conditions later. But Katia, let's talk about Sikander Raza a little bit. He's been absolutely incredible this tournament. It's his third player of the match, awarding five games. We've seen what he can do with the bat. And with the ball, before the tournament, Joe said he bowls a bit like Sunil Narine. He's learned from Narine, having worked closely with him before. He's got even more variations than Narine. It's somewhere between a Mark Watt and Narine, which is a pretty handy combination.
That's quite something, isn't it? Well, he's brilliant, as we've said. He's absolutely brilliant. We've said in so many of these podcasts in the last few
days in the last couple of weeks that Sikander Raza is just absolutely brilliant. He's had a fantastic year. And it's just brilliant that on a stage like this, we get to see and celebrate the talent that Sikander Raza is, with Zimbabwe being included in it. And in the group stage, he was obviously Zimbabwe's best player, finished the group stage as the leading run scorer. But he also was brilliant with the ball. He took three wickets. I think it was their second match, but I can't quite remember. He took three wickets in that match. And he's taken another three wickets here. And they were crucial, crucial wickets to break the back of that Pakistan chase. And whatever he touches pretty much turns to gold, which is a pretty handy thing to have in your all-rounder and your best player, to be honest. But yeah, no, he's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, put the Sikander Raza hat on again, because, you know, he's just been box office and he's provided some really, really great cricket.
It's a shame that he's 36 now. We've missed the prime of his career, really, at ICC tournaments. It's the first time we've seen him in a major tournament in quite some time. Going back to the over, I guess, that changed the game, Shadab Khan hits Raza for six, and then he kind of tries to repeat the trick the next ball he's caught long off. Abhishek, is that the moment that changes the game? Pakistan recovered from 36 for three. They got themselves back up to 88 for three. Run rate was under control. Is that the moment that Pakistan will look back on as like, yeah, even though Zimbabwe had that good start with the ball, Pakistan still had the game under their control?
They lost it from three in three balls. I mean, how often do you see that? They the day they stacked, they played the extra batter, they ran out of bowlers in the last over. And when they replaced that batter with the bowler, they ran out of batters in the last over. It's one of those things that happened. I mean, at three from three balls, they should have won that match. But Zimbabwe kept their calm. I mean, see, in the first ball of the last over, mid-off was inside, mid-on was inside. He bowled a pitched-up, slower ball. I think that... And he got a wicket. He didn't push back the fielder. He got a wicket on the edge of the circle. Now, sometimes these things go your way. Today, they went Zimbabwe's.
You focus the numbers. You think there's a decent chance that Zimbabwe qualify for the semi-finals now?
Yeah. Zimbabwe were not expected to get any points out of their matches against India, Pakistan and South Africa. But now they've got 3 points from two matches. Even if they lose to India. If Zimbabwe beat Bangladesh and Netherlands, which is not improbable, they go up to 7 points. If South Africa lose to both India and Pakistan, once again, not improbable, they will be stuck with two defeats, which is about 5 points. And Pakistan will be stuck at a maximum of 6 points. So with Zimbabwe on say 7, South Africa on 5 and Pakistan on 6, there's a high chance that Zimbabwe may go through along with India.
And more generally, there's been so much chat over the last year about Bubba and Rizwan's approach to the top of the order, the firepower in the middle order that Pakistan have compared to the 2021 World Cup. They had Fakhar Zaman, Mohammad Hafeez and Shoaib Malik in the middle. None of them are there now. Is there some vindication in the way that Bubba and Rizwan have played over the last year, given how meek that middle order has been? Did you saw today that the second there was kind of any pressure applied on them, they crumbled again. Do you understand why there's been that caution, Abhishek, at the top?
Yeah, all the more reason I expected Pakistan to break up that Bubba Rizwan stand at some point and allow these cricketers more time in the middle. So that never happened at any point. Bubba Rizwan, they took the game deep, but by doing that, the rest of the batting, I mean, to now, of course, today they had, recently they have had Shan Masood, who can also drop anchor, but their batters were not prepared to take this game deep. They should, had they played, you mentioned that Sikander Raza over, but they should have won it from there without losing another wicket. The match should not have come this close. They just lost wickets.
Do you think it's a personnel thing? Have Pakistan backed the wrong players in the middle order over the last year or so?
They didn't have much of a choice. I mean, I don't know what the cause and what the effect is. But I mean, whether they are expected to hit from the onset because Babar and Rizwan backed the, or because or Babar and Rizwan, bad teeth because they can't last long. I mean, I don't know which one is the cause, but I mean, these two have gone hand in hand over time. So, something has to change at some point.
Just one thing I wanted to mention just before I forget is that some of the reaction in Pakistan has been, as you expect, quite dramatic. Shoaib Akhtar, for example, has called the defeat embarrassing. I just really want to say that it's not embarrassing to lose against Zimbabwe. I know Pakistan have greater resources. This is a really good Zimbabwe side. And I think if there's anything this tournament has taught us is that all of these elite sides with supposedly, or relatively speaking, infinite resources at their disposal, they're all very, very vulnerable to I mean, these are full member countries we're talking about with Ireland and Zimbabwe. But these teams can really pose serious problems on their day, and especially in these conditions. But one final question I'm going to ask Abhishek before we get to the South Africa game. This tournament is a tournament of upsets so far. Do you think the conditions play a part in that? Massive boundaries, and then just the extra pace and bounce that we were talking about earlier. There isn't that much elite T20 cricket played in Australia. There aren't the very best players in the world tend not to play in the Big Bash. There aren't that many T20Is in Australia. The IPLs, obviously, in India and has played a little bit in the UAE. Pakistan Super Leagues in Pakistan, obviously, and has been played in the UAE as well. So we're used to seeing the best T20 players in the world play loads of the format in Asia, but not so much on the bouncy, faster tracks that we see in Australia. Do you think that plays a part in it?
Logically, that should have played a part because the batters of the subcontinent are not used to such big grounds, not used to such pace and bounce. But see, New Zealand started off really well. They don't play on the largest of grounds. And I mean, the key lies with boundary hitting, but you still have to find the boundary. But you, as India demonstrated, I think, very well against Pakistan, you also have to pick up the tools. India and Pakistan, I think, picked up the same number of tools or something, but you have to pick up the tools as well. Along with hitting boundaries, it's not one or the other. You have to do both here.
Moving on to the South Africa-Bangladesh game, which feels like a very long time ago now. South Africa absolutely trounced Bangladesh. The Proteas obviously had that very frustrating washout against Zimbabwe, where they'd already reached the 5-over DLS target when the rain fell, but not enough balls had been bowled for a result to hold. This time they made sure that they got the point when it was in their control. Katty, essential to that victory was Riley Rousseau scoring his second 100 in as many T20I innings as South Africa put on 205. He is some addition to this South Africa lineup compared to what they had at the last World Cup. He's been out of the international frame for a few years now, and now he's one of the best number threes going in the T20 game.
Yeah, well, I think he's one of these players that's flown into the tournament massively, massively under the radar. Like before the tournament, we were all talking about Suryakumar Yadav or Josh Butler being the leading run scorer, things like that. But Riley Rousseau's record this year is something else. And as you said, he's been out of South Africa side for, I think, well, T20 side for, I think, like 6 years, which is quite something. Not always completely his fault. But I think I also saw today he got two consecutive ducks in his first, like, two innings for South Africa. But the amount of runs he scored this year is quite staggering because you look at the 200s he's scored now, and that's incredible in itself. But he scored 96 not out against England as well. So just one ball more in that, and we could be talking about someone who's got three T20 hundreds this year. And also, if you look at where he was against India, South Africa's top order had a really, really terrible time in the first couple of matches. And people were calling for maybe Reeza Hendricks to come in rather than Riley Rousseau. Themba Bavuma was also having a mare and continues to have a mare. But he then hit that century in the final match against India. And it showed how good a player he was in, but how good a player he is. But still, he wasn't talked about coming into this tournament as the force that he could be. And he takes apart everything. He takes apart spin, he takes apart pace. You know, it's not that he's a one-trick pony. He's got many, many bows to his arrow, if that's the phrase, probably the wrong way around. But yeah, I just think he's brilliant and he's flown massively under the radar.
You mentioned the form of skipper Themba Bavuma there. Massive win for South Africa, but he's not just not having a great time. He's not had a great time for a really long time. Is actually with South Africa doing as well as they are, making it even more awkward than it was at the start of the competition.
Well, yeah, I think there are real problems there now. I think it's his last seven innings. He hasn't reached double figures, but it's not necessarily... that's a pressing problem in itself, but it's not necessarily the most pressing problem. It's the way he's doing it as well. His strike rate this year, I think, is 79, which for a T20 opener is not the best when you consider what's around him as well. You've got Quinton de Kock, who's come into form at really amazing timing. I think he's scored... In his last four innings, he scored a ridiculous amount of runs, and it was a travesty against Zimbabwe that one of the iconic T20 innings didn't count. His farming of the strike against Bavuma was absolutely iconic. It's a difficult thing to drop your captain halfway through a World Cup, or not even halfway through a World Cup. But if Bavuma wasn't captain, it would be a no-brainer. You've got Reeza Hendricks, I think, waiting on the sidelines, who's got an incredible record as well. He averages 40-plus this year. And his strike rate is much better than Bavuma's. So there comes a time where they've got to think about it and they've got to seriously weigh up, because they've got so much power in that lineup and they really have the potential to go all the way in the tournament. But Bavuma has to be a question that they find an answer to, whether Bavuma finds it himself or whether the selectors find it for him.
Mm. And Andrik Nukia was on fire with the ball, taking 4 for 10, bowling mid-90 MPH. How highly do you rate their chances of winning the thing? They play India on Sunday, which should be a better indicator of where they're at. But that's a side with few holes in it.
Seriously, they could win the tournament. I think we've got to remember that this Bangladesh side is not very good. Of all the sides that directly qualified for the Super 12s, I reckon they're probably the weakest. And they could have easily been turned over by the Netherlands as well. But we've got to seriously take South Africa as a contender. As you said, there's very few holes in their lineup. Their bowlers are awesome. You know, Anrik Nokia has been bowling well for a really long time. You've got Ngidi and Rabada as well. Possibly spin is where they might get let down. Shamsi and Maharaj are not exactly having their best years in T20 cricket, but I think everyone's spinners are going to struggle in this tournament in Australia anyway, so that might not be the most pressing factor. They were hard done by against Zimbabwe by not getting that win over the line and only taking a point from that, but especially with Pakistan losing today, they could really, really do well.
Mm. And Abhishek, just on Bangladesh, there, I don't think people will realise quite how wretched their record in T20 cricket is recently. Against full member size, it's something like they've lost 21 of the last 23. It's something that dramatic. What's happened to Bangladesh? Not that long ago, they're a side viewed as rapidly improving in white ball cricket. And there was chat going into the last World Cup, albeit in very different conditions, that they'd be one of the dark horses. They couldn't be further away from that tag here in 2022.
Only three Bangladeshis have scored at a strike rate of over 130 this year. So the highest among them is Ritan Das, who is at 135. Eight South Africans have scored at a rate faster than him. Eight. Three South Africans have scored at over 180 this year. So that is the difference between Bangladesh and the top side. If you go through the career records of the entire Bangladesh squad, not a single person is there who strikes at over 130. You cannot do well in T20 cricket with a squad like that. And that will probably win you matches on very slow, low pitches where hitting is not a factor. But unfortunately, that is not where majority of T20 is played around the world. Definitely not in global tournaments.
Mm.
Unless they change their approach, unless they pick hitters, more hitters in their squad, they're never going to win.
Going to the other game of the day, India had a very stress-free victory over the Netherlands. I guess some eyebrows were raised about how slowly they started with the bat before they got up to 180 in the end. They were 32 for one off the power play. Abhishek, is that caution basically because they view that as the best way of them not tripping up and getting bundled for a 120 to 140 type score?
Yes, the way upsets are happening, the first thing they probably wanted was to avoid an upset. I can't really blame them. They know that they have got 2 points. And even if they lose to South Africa, if they win the other matches, the wins will be enough to take them through to the semi-final. And after Pakistan's defeat today, they are more certain of that. So now they'll just keep on winning without trying to do anything fancy, without trying to experiment. I can't really blame them for that. But again, I mean, the other side as well. If you play exactly one type of cricket on one, someday against the top side, when this top order will fail. I mean, we saw that against Pakistan. India collapsed against Pakistan in the top order inside the power play. It was not a regular win. It was a near miracle that happened. Nothing less than that could have won that match from there. So that won't be repeated if they have another collapse. Mm. So that is one, unless they keep trying things. I wonder what the plan B is.
And just finally, Katya Dabashek, we'll go to Katya first. Which two sides from that group do you think will go to the semi-finals?
I really want to say Zimbabwe. Like, I really want to say Zimbabwe. But I think it will probably be South Africa and India, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately if you're a fan of South Africa or India, but I would love it if Zimbabwe could go through.
I mean, logically, it seems South Africa and India, but ideally, I would want Zimbabwe and any other
side. Well, thanks, Katya. Thanks, Abhishek. That's all we have time for on today's show. A reminder that if you finish listening to this and you still want more from us, there's the weekly show that came out earlier today. If not, we've got another podcast coming your way tomorrow after England play Australia in a must-win game for the MCG. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.